Hi, I'm Sarah Lawson. I'm the owner of S&H Construction in Belmont, Massachusetts.
And I'm Bruce Irving. I'm a home renovation consultant and a real estate agent in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Welcome to Builder's Notebook. Hi,
no.
Bruce.
No. Hi, Sarah. I started. I know what we should do.
What?
Let's have a staring contest. I always beat my kids in this.
No blinking?
You just blinked. All right. So I won that, folks. Welcome back. And so how are you? Here we are in the fall. Anything going on? You're a city dweller. You talked about that last show. What happens in the city at this time of year?
Oh, it's just nice. You just sort of watch everybody. Actually, we have this great spot in our apartment on Tremont Street where we can see the world go by with the dogs and the kids and all this stuff. And it's just seeing everybody getting ready for fall. Also, the city's really fun in the fall. Yeah. You can go ride your bike or go for a run around the public garden or go down by the river. It's really
cool,
beautiful. What about you?
We have a convert in you to urban life. I went to London not so long ago and noticed just what a well-run urban environment. I'm sure it has its problems, but it also has a human scale that was really noticeable. And what I really think has happened over there is that they've gotten rid of a lot of personal cars. It's been through some serious social engineering and pricing and this and that. And it's really noticeable.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
So I've really, really dug the whole thing.
You know, in the South End where we are on Tremont Street, they're putting in bike paths on both sides of the road. And so it's going from being a four-lane road, which was pretty chaotic, and every once in a while people got hit by cars, to being this, like, people are, the bike paths aren't even done, and people are riding on them because it's just safer. You know, they can get away from cars. It's amazing.
I mean, we're of an age where cars were everything. And I have to admit, I'm slow coming to this slowly. Yeah. I rode a bike in London. It was electric. It was free. It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, it wasn't free. There was an app, and it worked great. So I think that's coming our way.
It's incredible. I love it.
All right.
Well,
so
we're here today.
We are.
To talk to Gail and Mike Brown, and they are the owners of ABA. And their firm is a leader in energy analysis. And so they are the people who do things like HERS rating. They will diagnose your house and, you know, why am I telling what they do when they're going to be telling us what they do? But it's in that realm.
Well, I mean, I think the point is that there's an entire business, theirs, an industry that is finally taking the concept of energy efficiency and quantifying it. There's all sorts of programs, accreditations, acronyms, all sorts of analyses that bring a rigor to the undertaking, which is important because otherwise it's just sort of not smoke and mirrors, but sort of like, it's energy efficient. What do you mean?
Right. And especially with renovation, which in our business, most of what we do is renovation, that you're taking these, this is a way of understanding the performance of the house as a whole. Mm-hmm. And you have to have that because you can be putting in the best windows ever. But, you know, if you've got like a
stuff coming around, cold air going around those.
Exactly.
Great windows,
not so good. Like so that. They help you understand it in a more holistic way.
Let's get them in here.
Let's do it. Hi, Mike and Gail. Thanks so much for coming. We really appreciate it. We're going to talk about energy measurement in houses. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about your company, which you're going to explain better than I am.
What does ABA stand for?
I'll take that. And thanks for having us. This is Gail Brown from Advanced Building Analysis. That's how I like to answer the phone.
Building Analysis. Okay, that helps a lot.
And we're basically, at the core, we're a home energy rating company. HERS Rater.
Well, there's an acronym. Yeah. What's that stand for?
Home Energy Rating System.
Okay. Who came up with that?
I will let Mike handle the history.
By the way, you guys are husband and wife, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll just watch.
Explain the dynamic. People are like, wow, those people should go out on a date. They're thinking when they're listening to this.
So
wait a minute.
Who came up with that
one? So by habit, I defer to Gil. I let her talk first and try to listen. And anyway, HERS Rater business is still something that's not widely known. I think as broadly as we would like it to be. But the home energy rating system has been around since the early 90s. And we, I don't know how much history you want to go into, but I can go off and like for
well,
five
tell
or
us
10 minutes.
Where it came from. Who sure. was the authority that came
right.
up with it?
It's a national organization called ResNet,
okay,
which originally formed this at the request of the mortgage industry,
oh.
which was looking for cost-effective ways to fund energy efficiency improvements
okay.
and finance them.
Uh-huh.
And they came up with something called an energy-efficient mortgage, which would be a mortgage that would be granted based upon the added income, which is the energy savings mm-hmm. from the improvements mm. that are made.
Oh, so it's very green eye shade based, if you know that acronym. Guys and gals who wear green eye shades are really all about the numbers. And if they're going to be loaning X, they want to have a return that they can gauge a
right.
Y, and
yep.
Bob's your uncle.
Yep.
And hence, a real need for true numbers.
Right. So we dig really deeply into all the different uses of energy in a home, mm-hmm. model them very carefully. It's called an asset rating,
mm-hmm.
and that means we're describing the property and not the people who end up living there,
mm.
where the people living there can do all sorts of weird things with a home, but yep. we want to say this is the rating of the home.
Got it.
Independent of whoever lives there, and which means we're estimating what the building will perform like with average American occupancy.
So I actually want to back up for just a second, because I'm not sure that we've said that what this is about is measuring the energy impact or usage of a building. And stop me anytime since I'm not the expert, but the idea is that it's a comprehensive look at what the energy impact is, as opposed to, as a builder, we're putting in, you know, well-insulated windows, we're putting in, you know, insulation on the roof, we're doing good things.
Yeah.
But you guys are coming in and trying to quantify
exactly.
how's this house performing as a whole.
Exactly. So it kind of rates it on a scale. The scale originally was 100 for a home built in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the energy codes in the building construction fields are built on HERS rating at this point.
Yes.
Well, I have to know, what's a house these days achieving?
So new construction, that's a very good question, because we periodically go through code changes.
Mm.
So as of January 1st, 2023, anything permitted from then on, new construction is a HERS. I have some notes here, because I always like
sure.
to not
Don't
say the
mess
wrong
around
thing.
With the numbers.
And this is in Massachusetts
this
that
is
we're
Massachusetts.
Talking about. Yes.
So for new construction, in a home that's using any type of fuel type, it's a HERS 52. So the lower is more efficient.
Oh, yeah.
Phew, I was like, oh no, we're going
yeah.
backwards.
Yeah.
So what was once standard at 100
mm-hmm.
Is now almost half.
Correct. Right? That's correct.
In a matter of 17 years.
Right. There's been a tremendous change in
yes.
the way we build buildings. And
yes.
I'm sure you've noticed that,
We sure have. Yeah. Another thing that strikes us is that the new energy code requires HERS raters much more frequently than it used to be in the old mm-hmm. days. So in terms of if you're doing a renovation above a certain mm-hmm. size,
yep.
you need to have someone come in and quantify it. So you guys must have seen business go like insane.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll speak to that, because I usually take all the onboarding of calls.
Yeah.
And so it's been definitely an increase in home energy ratings done.
Yes.
With that, it kind of rolled out really quickly.
Yes.
Right now, the Mass DOER has a really good FAQ out there, which outlines
D-O-E-R
what.
FAQ.
But everyone knows
Department
what a FAQ.
Energy resources.
Got it.
Yeah. And because there is a whole rubric of when you would need a HERS rating.
Yes.
And in the past, renovations and additions on the books, you could do it, but typically not so much.
Yes.
But there's three kind of basic rules, which I can kind of speak to. One is if you're doing an addition, that's over 1,000 square feet.
Right.
Additions or renovations or of 50% or more of the house as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then the third would be what they call a level 3 alteration, where you're renovating at least 50% or more of the home. And that is kind of a a rubric from the IBC, the International Building Code.
Right.
So that's kind of a definition there. We like to defer to architects on that one because yes. we're firmly in the energy code field.
You know, it's really interesting because the architects in many ways should be the people who are dictating this. They're doing the square footage. Mm-hmm. They're making the calculations. But they're also looking to us builders to understand things too. And so it's really an interesting, everybody's sort of learning. And that's why we're really, I'm really happy to have you locked in this room because there, there are questions.
Yeah, no, that's great because these are the questions that we're having every day. The conversations we're having with builders, homeowners,
inspectors.
Architects, everyone, inspectors.
Yeah. Who is the person that calls the you guys up?
We service homeowners, builders, developers, architects.
Got it.
Really run the gamut. Mm-hmm. We love working with architects and builders the most because we get that relationship.
Right.
We can optimize, you know, their plans for their build plan for energy codes and provide that feedback. And in that way, the whole industry moves forward.
It's the most productive relationship for us because mm-hmm. we're already speaking the same language mm-hmm. for the most part.
Right.
And when you're talking to a homeowner or a developer sometimes, there's more education just to bring them up
yes.
to the speed that the conversation should be to begin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of confusion over so much of what we do. We try to bring clarity to this evaluation of all sorts of different types of energy use in one holistic evaluation.
Yes.
And that's the value of it. We want to point people in the direction of those things which make the biggest difference.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Focus on those decisions that concern those issues and push aside a lot of other noise that we don't need to be talking about.
What's an example?
Yeah.
Well, the big lever items are air tightness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How you do ventilation, mm-hmm. Windows, mm-hmm. and the efficiencies of your heating systems. Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the falderall that gets
the efficiency of your cooling system in our climate is actually pretty trivial.
Oh.
So interesting. Yeah.
Our current climate.
Unfortunately.
Yeah,
it's changing. Correct.
Correct. Any other gimcrack or giga that you think should be not paid attention to?
There is, with architects often, a tendency to design in too much insulation or insulation in a way that's not evenly distributed.
Mm.
And we're trying to help people come up with an overall even investment in all of these features.
Mm. So interesting. You know, I was thinking about how we've sort of got two buckets. We've got the where you do the tripwire into the stretch energy code and you must do some of the things that you're describing. Mm-hmm. But then there's also where it's just people with, you know, some money who want to make their house more efficient and what do they pick? And I realize it depends on what the condition of the house is and such.
Yep.
But I just want to be clear about that because it really is two different things. Sometimes you have a choice and sometimes you don't have a choice, the way code is in Massachusetts now.
I see that. And code aside, we want to help people organize the approach. And there are three main steps to this always. Mm-hmm. The first step is to minimize loads. By that we mean why are we using energy in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
We're
right.
using energy to meet heat loss. To,
right.
to make up for heat loss.
Right.
So can you reduce the heat loss?
Right.
That's the first question.
Yep.
There's other types of loads, like how much hot water do you use?
Right.
You know, that'll be a load. The first question should always be, have we gotten the loads as low as we can
mm-hmm.
effectively? And then after that, you meet those loads with equipment that is appropriate and
yes.
The best efficiency that makes sense. You know, cost effectively. And then finally, after doing all of that, you look at renewable energy to provide the energy for that
yeah.
equipment.
Yeah, so interesting, because sometimes customers start with the renewable energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, they've got a giant house that isn't insulated that well or something.
And yeah. renewable energy by itself is a good investment, right? You're mm-hmm. going to make that money back quick. It's pretty clear how you make it back. But as an overall strategy, it's not the place to start.
It costs money to have you guys do your thing.
Yep.
How does How do the, other than adhering to regulations, how do your customers then turn the information that you found into selling points? There seems to be a lot of acronyms and certifications and that can be not slapped on a building, but given to a building. What kind of marketing, for lack of a better word, are there?
Sure, I'll speak to that. In terms of, you know, there are a lot of catchphrases mm-hmm. out there, right? So you have zero energy homes, you know, and there's a certification for that, or there's just you minimize your HERS index and your, you know, your electric load, and you size your solar panels that it covers your energy usage. Mm-hmm. So there's that without a label, right? Mm-hmm. Which mm-hmm. is something that we can do. There are all kinds of certifications. There's Passive House, there's right. LEED for Homes, National Green Building Standard, Energy Star Homes.
They're all
yeah,
still,
Department
and they're all
of
still
Energy.
Going? Because some of those yeah. feel very old school. And some
well,
of them.
They're still going. And I think the biggest bang for the buck right now that we're seeing is DOE, Department of Energy, mm-hmm. it's a national standard, zero energy ready homes. Hmm. So that kind of builds on Energy Star, which has been around, you know, we all hear it in terms of, oh, my appliances are yeah. Energy Star, but in terms of HERS rating, there's a lot of checklists and making sure that it's built efficiently with best practices. And you know, with that, you get that label. You know, the home is Energy Star
zero
labeled.
Zero energy ready.
Yep, zero energy ready. Mm-hmm. So it's ready. You know, you minimize the loads, all the things that Mike talked about, minimizing mm-hmm. loads, you know, following Energy Star pathway. And you all, it's a certification. You're ready to go and put that solar on and get to net zero. And it right now, the latest and greatest to help homeowners and builders is tax credits are yeah. becoming built on getting this certification.
So there's $5,000 as a federal tax credit mm-hmm. for achieving the DOE Zero Energy Ready Homes certification. One more thing that includes, or two more things really, it includes elements of the WaterSense program from the EPA and the Indoor Air Plus program from the EPA. And the Indoor Air Plus program is all about indoor air quality and health in these homes. So again and again, we're going to come back to not just energy, but health and durability. And these programs are a way to optimize all of that. Mm-hmm. And with the checklists that we have developed for these programs, it's a way of making sure you're not missing anything in this long list of things yeah. that you really should be considering as you go through a project.
Durability. Mm. Tell me more about that.
Well, part of the Energy Star checklists are water management checklists.
Okay.
And so we're looking at bulk water runoff, number one, mm-hmm. your roof runoff.
So based on the theory that water kills buildings?
Yeah, it does, mm-hmm. and things leak. Uh-huh. And so we want to get the water away from the building first.
Yep.
And that'll be the roof runoff and drainage, grading away from the building. And then it's how water is managed within the building assembly, and then it's indoor air quality items around moisture as well.
Oh, wow.
So okay. it's really holistic.
It's holistic, I was yeah. going to say. It's not just mm-hmm. the machine sitting in the dirt. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's the dirt. It's how it interacts mm-hmm. with its land and yeah, it's really great. That's really interesting.
But you must have fruitful. I'm thinking of a house we were just looking at where there's you know, moisture problems outside, there's moisture problems inside, there's rot in the sill. Like, I'm just thinking in Massachusetts, yes. it's like, so with these old buildings,
right? And in old buildings, we had a lot of energy loss, which went through the envelope in the form of air and yeah. hot air, which actually helped dry things out.
Yes, for sure.
So in an older building, it was more forgiving to bad flashing and leaks. It was going to be
right.
okay.
It was a breathing house.
Right? Yeah. In the newer building, you need to be so much more careful about potential leaks and thinking about when things get wet, how do they dry out?
For sure. We definitely think about that. You know, I want to make sure I'm always advising people in a the way beyond my actual qualifications. And one of the things is that I love is roof insulation. When people and obviously air management, so you can't have leaky windows. But this sort of idea of I guess this is the low hanging fruit, bang for your buck. You want to make your house perform better. If you're really lucky and you can keep going on your roof insulation, you can put rigid on the top and put storm windows on the windows for air management. And I have always imagined or thought, and I'm waiting for you to tell me I'm wrong, that that's a pretty good bang for your buck situation for energy performance of a house.
Yeah, but you'll know better than me what the costs are, and we'd get all sorts of different costs for exterior rigid insulation.
Mm. Oh, for sure, because you're redoing the soffits. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. But if you, okay, so let's say you're really just keeping it simple. Mm-hmm. You're doing the roof and you're doing the storm windows. Like, that's something that people can do for, you know, less than...
You mean the roof's underside.
The underside. Yeah. So if you've got a cathedral ceiling under there, then you're, you know, digging out plaster, sure. But that's not super expensive to do. And sometimes you even have exposed. Sometimes the rafters are... Yeah.
So we keep in mind a few other rubrics on this, which are one thing a concept we repeat over and over and over again as we talk about air leakage through building assemblies is don't let warm, moist air reach cold surfaces.
Indeed.
And that will start with good air sealing on the inside of our building envelope.
Yes.
So the sheetrock side.
Yes.
So one thing we're always talking about is airtight drywall as an approach to minimize moisture problems within the building assembly.
I understand. Hmm. Yeah, and of course you have to do those things correctly, both of those things I just mentioned in terms of how the storm windows are installed, because they can be installed wrong and promote condensation as well.
And that's interesting, right? A storm window, from my perspective, is only really warranted if the interior window is pretty tight. Otherwise, you will have condensation on the storm window.
Because you're getting the warm moisture coming out of the house, hitting the cold surface.
Cold surface.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if you have it installed correctly, then at least it can drain.
That too.
Yeah.
I might as well step into it since we have people who live and breathe this and look at it with green eye shades.
Yeah.
I come from an old house background and have been banging a little drum or climbing on a little hobby horse for years about the inadvisability of replacement windows when one has original wood windows that can be weather stripped and storm windowed. How wrong am I?
Well,
this is a big moment, so be careful how you...
No. Punch me right in the face.
Yeah,
it's fine. I need to update my files.
For sure. I mean, if you are able to, do a small renovation, right, and just do something like that, and you want to keep your windows, there are people out there, and we're based out of Amesbury, Massachusetts. There's a great little company there called Window Woman.
I know Allison.
Yeah, and she'll take your windows
and
she'll redo them, and she'll get them pretty tight for you, you know, and if that's something that, you know, is close to your heart and you want to do, that's a great thing.
But let's
thing
talk
to do.
From the green eye shade.
Yeah, for sure.
Is the science or are the numbers there or not for
a well-done,
tightened window?
They are.
Yeah.
We worked with her a little, a bit to kind of quantify that.
Ah.
And
oh,
we
see,
definitely did
great.
See improvements.
So interesting.
They're not going to be like a triple pane window?
No.
But
right.
Maybe the equivalent performance to a double pane window.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
Also, the insulating the weight pockets, though. You can't get away with that. You've got to do that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I feel less wrong, which is my goal every morning.
Well, I was just saying this exact same thing to a customer, 2 days ago, and it's really nice to hear that. Because you can't always afford to. They have a house that's got a it's wrapped in vinyl siding, and so for them to replace new construction windows is taking off all the siding, painting the whole house is a big deal. So for them to be able to put on storms and get their windows in decent shape, it saves them a couple $100,000. So it's really nice to know that I wasn't advising them totally incorrectly.
No, and I think it's important with some of those jobs. You want to kind of if you. Your budget is only for one thing at a time, really do only one thing at a time. Because in terms of energy codes, if you get to that tipping point, you have to get everything up to effectively new construction standards, which can be tough in an older home.
Yes. Do you guys have much interaction with the utility company rebates?
Yes. So I'll speak to that as well, because we do service. We are verifiers for two of the MassSave programs. Mm-hmm. One would be MassSave residential new construction, and the other being MassSave renovations and additions.
There's one more. We do the passive house multifamily.
Yeah, okay. Except that's really between. We do some verifier services for that, but the high rise and passive house pathways are typically between the developers and the program
that's
administrators.
That's an administrative arrangement. But
yeah.
We do help with the full
verification whole building tests
of a multifamily building.
Correct.
Cutting directly back to me, which is one of my favorite things to do. why is it that the MassSave, rebate program doesn't seem to take care of foam insulation?
So I think the path that they've chosen in the past couple years is to try to also deal with a whole home renovation and really help the homes that are trying to get everything up to par. So with in terms of MassSave renovations and additions, they're really incentivizing a whole home approach. They give the most money for mechanicals, insulation upgrades, new windows, and air leakage. So it really takes all of those. If you're doing, they have their other program that most people are familiar with, homeowners, home energy assessment program, and that is tied into blown-in insulation and giving a rebate on that.
But why is that? Because if you're doing foam, then you're handling the air infiltration and the thermal.
Mike has an answer.
Yeah, Mike.
Okay,
Mike
there we go. Sorry, you've held off very well.
Yeah.
I couldn't see you.
You did so well.
Go ahead. I'm very impressed.
Hold him back over here.
Okay.
I've been wanting to bring up something for a while.
This is his segue.
And I think this is part of the answer, and it's a very broad topic. It's what is the carbon emissions of the materials that we use?
Yeah, you did mention earlier that this is a whole... The carbon footprint is also part of your calculation.
Absolutely. So this is relatively new in our industry. It's been something that's been around in the form of life cycle analysis as part of LEED for quite a while, but not broadly used and not part of the HERS radar world. But we realized that we're at the point in Massachusetts in particular where when we look at new construction of a building, there's a lot of emissions associated with the materials and the initial construction of the building.
Yep.
And because our annual emissions have gotten so small, we're down to about 50% of that new home in 2006, there's not a lot of additional savings to be had from adding more insulation. So I was convinced a few years ago now that it's time to start weighing those initial emissions against savings in emissions over time from reduced energy use.
Yeah.
And we're really there now. In fact, for the average new home in Massachusetts, my calculations were that in the first 10 years of operation of the building, the atmospheric impact of CO2 that's emitted from the emissions, from the materials.
From the materials themselves or the manufacturer?
The manufacturing, extraction, the
delivery, everything?
Everything up. They call it cradle to gate.
Got it.
And this is pretty well defined, very well defined. That emissions from the materials is equal to the home's emissions impact over 10 years. So if we're concerned now with emissions over shorter time frames, this really starts to matter.
I see.
And when you look at choice of material now, it impacts that the emissions of materials dramatically. For example, cellulose is actually a carbon sink. We're taking carbon out of the carbon cycle when we use cellulose. But foam is a petroleum product, and it has a lot of emissions associated with its manufacturing. So if you're talking about cost-effective limits in terms of carbon emissions, you have very different cost-effective limits for foam insulation or cellulose insulation.
So and is that why the utilities have decided not to underwrite that?
I think that's part of the reason. There's also a dollar cost. So the foam traditionally always cost a lot more than the cellulose. Yep. That's changed a lot as we've seen more and more foam get used.
Well, and it's also, I think that cellulose, they didn't do the air management correctly, so that made it less, because when you're doing the air sealing, it takes a lot of time. So there's cost there.
Foam by itself is not a good air sealing strategy. You won't get as tight as you can just by itself. So regardless of whether you use cellulose or foam, you want to have a comprehensive strategy And that's just part of a conversation.
I think that when it's being presented to customers, when there was a choice, that it's, you know, you're looking at what the labor costs are. And if mm-hmm. most people, SNH included, historically we've been doing foam forever, that we did it in a way that we weren't taking the air control, air infiltration as a separate topic. Mm-hmm. We were just like, yay, foam solves
right,
it.
Right.
Then there weren't labor costs associated with that. So it's a question of sort of upping the game and understanding what the costs are with foam, which I think historically has not been sort of presented to customers so that the cellulose looks, it's not as cheap as it looks because
right,
then you really have to do air sealing with
the
cellulose.
So if we want to dig into like the insulation and air sealing strategies, the way they go together, you're talking about two very different strategies. With spray foam, you spray foam a cavity and you make the cavity airtight. But there's lots of air leaks that go past that cavity through joints in the framing.
Oh, for sure.
And so all of those joints in the framing also need to be sealed.
And we know that.
I'm sure you do. But a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
And they think this just spray foaming will get them tight enough.
Yes.
And by itself, it can leave some really important leaks untouched.
Which then can be filled with warm air, rise it.
Our warm, moist air can reach cold surfaces
that way, which
moisture problems and cause a lot of air changes, of uncontrolled air changes.
What kind of house do you guys live in?
It's an old house built in the 19-teens and kind of cobbled together out of pieces of other homes. Mm. It was already being reused.
Very Yankee.
It was the area was a peach farm, and we were not the main house, we think.
Oh, wow.
It was just the house, you know, a little bit down the street that they kind of cobbled together.
Yep, the first floor framing looks like two different homes were put together.
So what have you done to make it a brown certified home?
We've done a number of things. We spray foamed our foundation, closed cell foam.
Big one.
We put in a super insulated roof. Mm-hmm. And metal roof on top of that. Mm-hmm. We replaced the windows, one of the very first things we did. We'd used the Marvin Integrity windows back in like 2000 or so.
Yep.
And those are holding up well. And now we've gone to be all electric as much as possible, as it makes sense, you know, one thing at a time.
Yeah, the next thing will be the water heater.
The last thing in our home, which is not... electric is our
instantaneous
gas hot water.
Yeah. So you cook with electric now.
Yeah, we use the induction and we love it.
I've heard it's so good.
You better start getting hip to
it's
that.
It's so fast to boil water, you can't believe it.
And then it stops. My mother said, and you won't make the eggs explode. Because if the water boils off, the eggs, it'll stop.
And if you forget to turn it off.
Right, that's what I mean. You forget to turn it off, it turns off.
Which happens in our house.
Oh.
No, never.
I love cooking with cast iron, too. Always have. Yeah. And
works
the cast iron works
on
amazingly
it.
Well
yeah.
on it. Yeah.
The only thing is, from our perspective, is that it takes 50 amps. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot, because it's a big difference.
You know, we have a 200-amp service, and we're doing fine. We're charging two cars. We have solar panels. And
you just don't have a... Yeah. 10,000 square foot house with but people do run into it with that. That's a big chunk, right?
Yeah.
If a regular house is sort of 200 amps and you need 50 for that,
then
it does. That's something people run into, which
that's
is
going to be a fact of life that, going forward. We're going to need bigger panels,
for sure, and we're seeing that too. Yeah,
well, I like the fact that we went from deep geek to not burning the eggs.
but in terms of the improvement to our house since we lived there, and I've backed it out. I replaced those windows before I knew what HERS rating was.
Mm.
But our initial HERS rating, as I go back to figure out what it was in 1997, was about 140.
Okay. Mm.
And now we're about 30.
Sweet.
Wow. Just
with
from
the solar.
From
with the solar.
Solar.
Including
solar.
The solar
okay.
on the roof,
including the solar.
So what do you think about geothermal? We put them in, and people really, they're like attracted to it. Yes. Mm. That's why I'm asking.
So geothermal is just fraught with... potential pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complicated system that's not very commonly installed.
Yes.
Which means there's going to be a lot of ways to screw up, and you're going to keep on finding new ones.
Yeah.
There is a big push now, you know, to go all electric, and obviously the ground source heat pumps are great, geothermal is great, but if you're looking for cost effectiveness, you know, I think the air source heat pumps are... yeah. are the better way to
Air's
go at this point.
Air's a lot easier to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, we did one in Cambridge that was, the well was 1,500 feet.
Mm.
I mean,
the physics are good, yeah. but it's just not done at scale enough for it to be cost effective at a residential single family
yeah,
level.
It's expensive. I mean, just, yeah.
Well, we could basically go on forever.
We certainly could. What do you mean we're out of time?
Because Kale said the phone's ringing off the hook back at ABA. So. Yeah.
They've got to go.
You got to go. Do you want to tell us anything like how to find you guys before we bounce?
Well, oh, yeah, sure.
The internet apparently is very helpful.
Yes, it's
the big thing. We do have a website, yeah. So you can find us at advancedbuildinganalysis.com. You can find us. We're on some of the Mass Save lists for verifier services. So we're there. Although I will say that publicly facing for the Mass Save programs, we are right now publicly facing on the residential new construction. And if you're a builder working with us, we can also do the renovations and additions.
Great.
I wanted to leave with one last thing that is like the newest opportunity in our industry. I'm looking for people who want to participate with us on this. Mm. And that's doing a full and proper accounting of the embodied carbon of materials of construction alongside HERS rating. So if you have people, if anybody listening is interested in doing that kind of deep dive into their materials selection and how that is compared to carbon emissions from operation of a building, we're happy to start working on that with people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'll just add to that that we think that that's the next mm-hmm. energy efficiency metric that's going to happen mm-hmm. because
now that it's been driven,
yes,
you've yep. driven
we've
it
driven
so
it so far
down.
Exactly,
now it's time to get to those. Exactly,
we think
so
something like that is going to be the next thing.
We have appropriate software for it now. Mm-hmm. We have appropriate data sheets coming from all sorts of different products.
Yep. Right.
And we're working at the national level with ResNet on making an embodied carbon standard to go alongside the HERS rating standard.
Hmm. Yeah, we definitely love what we do, and we could keep going.
We could. I love this topic. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thanks
Real
for having
pleasure.
Us.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to learn more about SNH Construction, you can find us at shconstruction.com.
And if you want to learn more about my services, I'm at bruceirving.biz, B-I-Z.